A Gentle Introduction to South Indian Classical Carnatic Music, Part 3 of 4, by Ramesh Mahadevan, read to you by Shiv Kumar Kalyan Raman, and illustrations by Harihar of RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. Let's march on the concept of Thalam. If frequency and related concepts like tone, scale, and octaves form an important ingredient in music, the other equally important element is time, and important and related items like speed, rhythm, meter, etc. In fact, a musical piece is nothing but a source of sound emitting sound waves as a function of time. If you look into the Western system of musical notation, the staff notation, you would have noticed that the frequency is notated on the y-axis and the time is given on the horizontal axis. Unfortunately, we don't have such a elaborate and detailed notation of the Carnatic music because of the intricacies of microtones, etc. Though there have been some authors who have come up with elaborate microtonal schemes, Carnatic music is not also such set as in Western music. There are different interpretations of the same song, same raga, etc. Let's forget about the frequencies, etc. for this chapter and see how a melody progresses in time. The first concept is speed. Any song, even Janagana Mana or Roop Tera Mastana, has a prescribed speed. Roop Tera probably lasts for about 4 minutes, and if you sing it much faster or slower, it might sound funny. You might have played some old records at slow speed or fast speed and have had a good laugh when you were small. The Western music and Hindustani music recognize various degrees of speed or tempo, all the way from very, very, very slow to ultra fast. However, in Carnatic music, we do not talk about absolute speed. There is no connection to an external clock. This has often led to an arbitrariness in speed when songs are performed. So, this is also referred to as Kala Pramanam of a song, where a song has a sort of a sweet spot in terms of the speed at which it can be rendered, and you have some degree of aesthetic freedom to render it around that speed. But if you sing it very at a very completely different magnitude in terms of speed, it sounds weird. Some musicians have been well known for slow renditions of songs, and some, perhaps an equal number, have been equally well known for a fast rendition of the same songs. History and traditions have been the guidelines for the speed of a Carnatic music piece. Since the concept is hardly invoked, we do not discuss it any further. We will not compose an adagio, one of the many Western music tempos, or a vilambit, the slow speed used in Hindustani music on Carnatic compositions. Once a speed is chosen, Carnatic music is reasonably strict about keeping the speed constant. Therefore, you should not slow down or speed up during the course of a song unless mandated. However, Carnatic musicians occasionally double or even quadruple their speeds to their fundamental speeds during the course of certain pieces and build up the mood. You might have heard this in concerts of L. Subramaniam, who's capable of doing multiple speeds, like 6 speeds. In fact, lately there have been songs rendered in 7 speeds, like a Hamilton Beach blender. The basic speed is referred to as first kalam. Kalam also refers to time or tempo, literally meaning first speed, and correspondingly when the baud rate is doubled, it's called a second kalam, and when quadrupled, it's called the third kalam. Let's look at the other concepts. First, let me illustrate this first kalam. So, for example, if I want to count in a very simple first kalam, 1, 2, 3, 4, okay, so this you can see as one note per beat, and it's called the first kalam. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4 is a doubling of the speed, or 2 notes per beat, that's called a second kalam, and quadrupling gives me 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. So a song that might goes ninoko, okay, that's usually sung in the second column. Ninnukko, ninnukko. Okay, so that is the multiple speeds with which we sing this varnam. Ninnukko reyuna nura ninnukko. When you're singing at lower speed, you have a lot more flexibility, and you can do more aesthetic embellishments like microtones, etc., gamakas, and so on. Let's look at the other concepts, such as rhythm and meter. Rhythm is probably the most fundamental aspect of music. ancient civilizations beat their drums much before they made their harps and lutes. Repetitive sound patterns such as the pulsation of the heart are so primitive that everyone can relate to them. When we sing Roop Tera Mastana, even if it's the first time, we feel the rhythm. Amazing. Sometimes even if we forget how exactly the tune went, we can still recall its rhythm. Amazing, isn't it? We can tap our feet or pat our thighs or clap as we sing Roop Tera Mastana. How many times did you pat or clap during the first line of the song? How about Baba Black Sheep or Janagana Mana? How many times did you beat during the first lines of these pieces? What have you been doing by tapping or patting is simply metering the song to count how long each line lasted, sort of counting minutes. Now let's look at why such metering is important. Okay, songs are structured. They have stanzas and melodic phases, such as prose having paragraphs and sentences and words. A good way to write Roop Tera would be Roop Tera Mastana Pyar Mera Deewana. Each of these above lines in a music phase is or melody itself, and it seems to last about 2 beats. By the time you finish singing the above 4 lines, you would have counted 8 beats. This is a cyclical repetition. At the beginning of the first and the third and seventh beat, a new musical phrase begins. If the time interval begins between your clapping or beats is T seconds, then each melody lasts 2 T seconds and the entire opening stanza lasts 8 T seconds. In fact, if you went through the rest of the song, you will see that the same longer melody lasting 4 T seconds. So let's take a look at this in an illustration.
Roop Tera Mastana Pyar Mera Deewana.
1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8
1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8 1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8 Roop Tera Mastana Pyar Mera Deewana Bhool Koi Humse Na Ho Jaye.
So you saw how you could notate beats even to such a song. So we can go on to our next example. Baba Black Sheep is 4 beats. Have you any wool? It's 3 beats. Yes sir, 4 beats. 3 bags full, 3 beats. That's not difficult to figure out. Melodic structure lasts either 3 beats or 4 beats. We can therefore conclude that the periodicity is 7 beats with a substructure of 4 beats and 3 beats. Put another way, the melodic phrase lasts 7 T seconds, and even here there seems to be 2 sub-melodies in one phrase lasting 4 T and 3 T seconds. In the final analysis, we can say that Roop Tera Mastana is set to a 4-beat cycle. 2 beats would actually do, but 2 is too small a number to define a beat cycle, and Baba Black Sheep is a 7-beat cycle. The periodicity of the 4-beat cycle is 4 T, 7-beat cycle is 7 T. It might sound trivial, but we cannot hope to play Roop Tera Mastana using a 7-beat cycle. If we do, we might end up chopping the melody in the middle to fit our beat cycles. And by the same token, we cannot hope to play Baba Black Sheep using a 4-beat cycle. So let's summarize our concept of beat and cycles and metering. At the beginning of each beat cycle, a new melody seems to emerge. Melodic phases emerge even in the middle of the cycle in both songs, however. Fresh phrases almost always begin with each new beat cycle. In fact, if Baba Black Sheep happened to be a Carnatic song, it is made up of nothing but melodies which are 7T, it could be 14T or 21T long in time. In fact, the number 70 is some kind of characteristic time constant for this song. Therefore, we see that each song in Carnatic music is not only set to a ragam, but it's also composed of a series of melodies which are of specific duration to fit a beat cycle. So, if you're a music composer, you should select a beat cycle too. Let's say you have selected a 5-beat cycle. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Takka, takkita. Your melodies are constrained to last 5T or 10T or 15T etc. long, but not 3 or 7T. This is precisely the basis for the concept of thalam. A thalam is essentially a beat cycle. The 7-beat cycle is a 7-beat thalam and so on. An advanced aside. In general, a new melody need not begin just at the start of a thalam cycle. In fact, you can choose any point in the thalam cycle, any beat or even a point between the beats. as the starting point to begin your melodic phrase each time. This point in the thalam cycle is called eduppu in Tamil. The simplest cycle has only 3 beats per cycle, called Rupaka Thalam. By the way, we do not consider a simple 2-beat cycle as a thalam, even though 4 beats per cycle is a legitimate thalam. Carnatic music does not consider it. Instead, the popular binary thalam is interestingly an 8-beat cycle called Adi Thalam. You would have sung the entire 4 lines of Rupthera Mastana by the time you completed one cycle of Adi Thalam. A version of the 5-beat thalam is called Kanda Chapu. Takka Takketta. There are 6-beat thalams, though you may be able to get by with just 2 cycles of the 3-beat thalam, Rupakam. One version of the 7-beat cycle, which is appropriate for Baba Black Sheep, is called Mishra Chapu. Another quick aside, Mishra Chapu and Kanda Chapu are quite popular in Carnatic music. Mishra, in the context of thalam, means the number 7, and Kanda means the number 5, and Chapu denotes that the cycle is not uniform. For example, Kanda Chapu goes 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Here there's a subdivision of the cycle itself into 2 parts. The first part with 2 beats lasts for different duration compared to the second part with 3 beats. So it is basically 2 times T plus 3 times T to give 5 T. There are more complex thalams than what I have mentioned so far. There are complexities either due to the large number of beats per cycle, such as 11, 13, umpteen, etc., or due to their internal structures with subdivisions such as chapu thalams and so on. The another concept of thalam is the nadai, or the gait within the thalam. So for example, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4 is said to be chatushra nadai, which means there are 4 subnotes per beat, whereas you can have 3 subnotes per beat. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. This is looks like tuck, 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 almost like a horse carriage going. That is what is called Trishra Nadai. And there are similarly Kanda Nadai. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, so that is Kanda Nadai, and similarly Mishra Nadai and Sankirna Nadai, which are 7 and 9 notes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, and you can go even faster for 9. Alright, so these are all varieties. So most songs are on Chatushra Nadai, whereas there are some songs where you can change from one Nadai to the other. In light music, it's quite common to find Trishra Nadai based songs. Imagine composing musical melodies which perfectly fit last time cycle of 13 beats. It's hard. As improbable as it may sound, talented Carnatic musicians in fact choose to compose and perform in extremely complicated and long beat cycles of 20 plus beats per cycle, especially during the phase of the concert called Ragam Thanam Pallavi, where the Pallavi can be set to weird beats and weird nadais and all kinds of weird combinations in between. The violinist must be dreading such a point in time. Legend has it that, of course, in ancient times when kings and queens had nothing to do but to get entertained, a musician sang in 79-beat cycle and utterly humiliated a rival musician. However, the vast majority of the compositions are the simple thalams, Rupakam and Adi, or one of the chapu thalams. You can refer to erudite texts in the less-known Tamil thalams. In fact, the very morphology of thalams rival that of the Melakartha scheme, and one can get very sophisticated. The thalam are put, or quote, kept, that is, the beats are counted by various time-honored bookkeeping ways. So this is what you see when people are clapping around in a concert. They are basically putting or keeping thalam, even though they might be doing it wrongly. Even though at first it might look funny, the familiar way is still to tap one's thighs and sweep with the right hand when squatted. Ask your musically inclined friend to teach you how to put simple thalams like Adi Thalam and Rupaka Thalam. It is really a good idea to put thalam when you try to listen to a song. You not only learn to keep thalam in just a half an hour or so of trying, but also see that you are already a step above your friends who do not know about it. In fact, although it can be quite annoying at times, you will see that many people in the audience would put thalam in a concert and, quote, participate. Such feedback is often expected and appreciated by artists. In real concerts, the rhythm is kept also simultaneously by percussion instruments like a mridangam or a ghatam or kanjira, the exotic world of Carnatic music. Thus far, we have examined rather lightheartedly the basic tools of Carnatic music, such as ragams and thalams. It is now time to go to our stereo systems and listen to Carnatic music with an entirely new mindset. You can start off with a classical based movie song or play instrumental music. You can see the names of thalams and ragams in the CD jacket, can you? From the name, you can figure out which ragam is the Melakarth ragam by table 4 or a child ragam or a Janya ragam. Do you know the keys used in the ragam? More interestingly, do you have two other songs in the same ragam? Or have you listened to them? Can you see the similarities? Can you identify each time your favorite melodic phrases which occur in each musical piece, each time they occur? Carnatic music, the hardcore classical music that is divided into two broad areas. The first one is the realm of pre-composed music, or what is called Kalpita Sangeeta in Indian terminology, literally meaning that which is taught, and the creative improvisation aspect called Manodharma. Every performing artist learns both the aspects of Carnatic classical music. In fact, if you'd like to learn some Carnatic music yourself, both the Kalpita and Manodharma pieces are available in the Carnatic Music Archive webpage. He or she not only has a repertoire of several, sometimes hundreds of pieces of well-known songs, but he also or she also knows how to create music in an improvisational way. And in fact, a lot of Carnatic music, almost 50% of a concert, is improvisation. Though some diehard critics would say that the improvisation itself has become Kalpita nowadays. But I think that is being a little bit unfair to the hardworking artists of today. One easy way to improvise is to take an existing song and to distort it. Just look at the way the American national anthem is sung by various artists in their own unique way. But a Carnatic music tradition has a reasonably stringent guidelines on such, quote, liberties as to where to improvise. The first Kalpita part, the pre-existing compositions range from the very simple to the very complicated pieces. There are bhajan type songs, dance songs, love songs, and songs with a lot of vocal gimmicks. Students of music start with such pre-existing compositions, train their voice, assimilate the mood of the ragams, be comfortable with the thalams, and finally the training wheels come off and they move on into the territory of improvisation where they start making their own melodies as well. Some really talented musicians have made whopping careers as pure composers whose songs are performed by other musicians, and one recent composer this century is Papanasam Shivan, who died in the 70s, was known as the Thyagaraja of Tamil. By and large, most of the famous Carnatic musicians have left their marks not only as performers but also as creators. Lalgudi Jayaraman, a famous violinist, is an example of both a prolific composer as well as a prolific accompanying musician and a solo violinist. So to give you an idea of a simple song and how one can do improvisation based upon it, consider the song Kala Harana Melara in the ragam Shuddha Saveri. I choose it because it's very simple in structure. Kala Harana Melara Hare Sita Ramana Kala Harana Melara. So if you've been listening carefully, you notice that I improvised here. Me was flat. Pa, pa, pa. Is that an example of a Spurita Gamaka? Melara. And there I gave some Anuswaram. Ra, ha, re, re, pa, ma, re, ha, re. That was the first one. Ha, re. This is what you would listen for in Carnatic music for aesthetics. Kala Harana Melara Hare. Okay, we shall learn about the structures of these as we go on, but the key point is you can improvise even within the structure of the Kalpita Sangeeta, and most professional musicians do it to some extent without distorting the original creator's vision. Now you can then take this structure and then do an alapana on it. So this part of improvisation, looking at various curves of the ragam, is known as alapana. Okay, so we move on. Most compositions in Carnatic music have three parts to their body. The first two lines of the song, sometimes just one, is called Pallavi. like Raghupati Raghava Raja Ram or Roop Tera Mastana, they occur over and over again, especially after each stanza. Usually the Pallavi is followed by one or two or more lines, sometimes just one more. Ishwar Allah Tera Naam in Raghupati Raghava Raja Ram is an example. This portion is called Anupallavi. This is sung at the beginning for sure, but sometimes even during the end of the song, but not necessarily after each stanza. The stanzas of a song are called Charanam, and usually the Anupallavi is sung at the higher reaches. So a song unfolds as follows: Pallavi, Anupallavi, Charanam followed by Pallavi, Charanam 2 followed by Pallavi, and Charanam N followed by Pallavi. Sometimes you can have Pallavi, Anupallavi option and just a Samishti Charanam, as they say, an end of song. Okay, so to give you an idea of this in one famous song, Vathapi Ganapatim. Vatapi Ganapatim Bhajeham, 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 Varanasyam Varapradam Shri Varanasyam Varapradam Shri Vatapi Ganapatim Bhajeham. Vatapi Ganapatim Bhajeham, Varanasyam Varapradam is the Sahityam for the Pallavi.
Bhutadi Samsevita Charanam.
There starts the Anupallavi, starts at the middle reach and will go up, okay?
Bhūta bhaudika prapancha bharano Bhūta adisam sevita charanam Bhūta bhaudika prapancha bharanam Vitaraginam vinutayoginam Vitaraginam vinutayoginam Vitaraginam vinutayoginam Vishvakaranam Vitaraginam vinutayoginam Vishvakaranam Vignavaranam Vatapi Ganapatim Bhaje.
This song, there was an Anupallavi which starts at Bhutadi Samsevita Charanam Bhuta Bhavya Okay, anyway, I forget that. So that is the Anupallavi, and there was a faster piece in between called Madhyama Kala Sahityam.
Vitaraginam Vinutayoginam.
That part is usually a trademark of a composer known as Muthuswami Dikshitar, who composed the song. Similarly, the Charanam goes as
Purakumbha Sambhava Munivara Prapojitam Trikona Madhyagatam Murari Pramukadyubasitam Mooladhara Kshetrasitam Paradichat Vari Vagatmakam Pranava Swarupa Vakratuldo. Pranava Swarupa Vakratuld Nirantaro Nitila Chandra Gaindo Nijavamakara Vitrudekshu Dandam Karambuja Pasha Bijapuram. Karambuja Pasha Bijapuram Kalusha Viduram Budhakaram Guru Guha Doshita Bimbam Hamsadvani Bhushita Herambum Vatapi Ganapatim Bhajeham.
So that was the charanam. You saw the charanam was fairly long, and it also included Anupalavi like phraseology, music aspects in the latter part of the charanam. Pranava, that part uses some aspects of the Anupalavi, and comes back to the Pallavi. This is an example of a song, and obviously it had words and it has very important meanings, etc. And if you look at any of the classes in Carnatic music that's available in the archive, like Vatapi for example, we go into the details of the meanings of these words if you'd like to understand and appreciate those as well. So appreciating a Kriti is about appreciating the musical structure, the aesthetics, the improvisations of the artists, as well as the understanding the Sahityam. And as a starter in Carnatic music, one can start at any one of these points, whichever attracts or appeals to you. Typically, the Pallavi is set to a lower tetrachord in the lower octave. This is not a strict rule, and Anupallavi goes to the upper keys and to the next octave as well. Notice in the song Raghupati Raghava, the Anupallavi Ishwar Allah goes to higher frequencies. Given all this, let's see how Carnatic music education is imparted to students. The beginning student, learning the simple elements, the Kalpita aspects. If you are a Carnatic music lover and if a good teacher happens to be around, try to learn Carnatic music formally. Seriously, you may not be gifted like some other people, and your voice might sound like a vacuum cleaner. Many famous Carnatic musicians have lousy voices or nasal voices, and you may think that you are tone deaf, have no musical aptitude, etc. But none of these should come in the way of attempting to learn music, because the music is in the aesthetics as it's felt in the mind, and you can filter out the aspects of voice, etc., to understand the aesthetics which is attempted to be projected by the musician, whether it's yourself or whether it's the musician who's singing. If people can be trained to learn foreign languages or to ski or to become software programmers, they can equally be well trained to in Carnatic music. Even if you don't become a concert grade musician, you can learn enough to develop a deeper appreciation for music, which is very aesthetic. And from an educational aspect, I have personally found that it allows you to find structure in the abstract, which is very useful for creative or innovative activities like research, etc. Nothing like hands-on experience. In the olden Gurukulam or Gharana days, music was handed down from generation to generation orally, and the emphasis was heavily on memorizing and relentless practicing. So music is in some sense a practice and a discipline, even though practice is a major aspect of learning. So if you don't practice, you can expect to forget what you did learn, because it sort of fades away from memory, even though you might just have a vague recollection and it might appeal to you again when sung. But that's not the same as learning. You'll be able to grasp only with some practice. These days, Carnatic music teaching has become more modern and streamlined and less painful for students. In fact, you can start finding classes online from my webpage at Carnatic Music Archive. You can search for this on Google. Students are taught the theoretical and analytical techniques as well, instead of being forced to regurgitate what the gurus teach. This is an important aspect, because ultimately the student has to stand on their own whether to sing the Kritis, the Kalpita part, or to be able to sing the improvisational aspect of music, which is the Alapana, Swarakalpana, etc. So different people plateau at different levels, whereas some people keep going on and on in a learning phase. There's a lot to be learnt. The first thing that happens when you start to learn music is figuring out your characteristic octave. In Carnatic terminology, this is referred to as finding one's Shruti. Note that we are now using the word Shruti in a completely different sense. This is because everyone has his or her signature octave, which need not begin at 240 Hz. The student is asked to sing Sa Pa, and then the Sa of the upper octave, that is Tarasthai. Sa Pa. Okay, and you can see this in greater detail in the basic classes I have put up on the webpage. From this, the teacher extracts the range of the student's octave. After the octave is figured out, it is then captured on a drone instrument called the Shruti Box or a Tanpura, what you can hear behind. Nowadays, these things are available in MP3 files or it is also available on CDs. It's also available on electronic Tanpura, which is available from Rattle Systems in India and several other manufacturers. You can buy it in any music shop. By capturing, we mean that these instruments are tuned to produce these three notes at approximate frequencies. if the student's standard octave begins at 260 Hz, the strutty box will play the sa at 260 Hz. You see here in the background that there's a lot more melodic content than just the sa pa sa. There is a lot of overtones which go through the entire range, and therefore whenever you sing, your voice resonates with the appropriate range, and the background, the colorful background this shruti provides, is a beautiful mental softener, so to speak, and it calms your mind whether you're a singer or listener. Throughout the session, the drone instrument, like the one which behind me, will help keep playing these notes. Although this might seem quite annoying in the beginning, it is a necessary thing and it can be quite relaxing. Sometimes, after a lot of singing, people can lose their shrutis, and instead of producing the sa at 260 Hz or whatever happens to be the person's shruti, they can go completely off their octave and scales. At times like these, you can tune yourself afresh using the drone sounds of the shruti box and come back to your octave. By the way, for the purpose of writing, I am assuming that the student to be a male, it can very well be a woman student too, no sexism implied. Not only do beginning students tend to lose their shruti, even experts sometimes in the middle of a big concert can completely go off the shruti and sound quite miserable. More subtly, it is possible to go off the shruti in the middle of singing a song even though you have the shruti in the background. This is because either you're doing very fast notes or you stop having the feedback from your mouth to your ears, and the feedback from your shruti to your ears, and you stop matching it for a brief instant of time. So when you're doing something like this, because you're doing a lot of notes, it's possible to So when you're doing things like this, even though you might not notice it, there are very subtle lapses in shruti, and some very good shruti shuddham, this is known as shruti shuddham, or lack thereof, of being true to the shruti. Some very good musicians who are extremely shruti shuddham are Hyderabad brothers, who are famous artists right now. So you will see the sharpness in their tones, which strikes the shruti very sharply. So you can see, it's not very hard to find that they are much more shruti shuddham than other musicians of similar capability. So being more shruti shuddham, if you hear an instrument like, for example, the Gotu Adhyam, it is brilliantly shruti shuddham. It's almost impossible for a violin or an accompanying instrument or vocal to be as shruti shuddham as such an instrument, especially when played by a maestro like Ravi Kiran. So that itself adds to the sukham or beauty of the music which is heard. If you happen to have a shruti box or tanpura, it's a lot of fun tuning it to your octave or someone else's, like I have, just providing me a background. Try it. And I will also be able to put up some of the sample shrutis online for you to download. If you get an opportunity, jump on a concert stage and pluck away at a tambura, especially if the musician happens to be a big shot, just remember not to fall asleep during the concert. The shruti box or a tanpura, by its constant droning, adds an element of harmony to the Carnatic music, more importantly a backdrop that allows resonance of keynotes. The first bunch of music lessons concern with the production of notes, much like Julie Andrews teaching the Sound of Music kids about Doremi. There are correspondingly music Indian movie songs as well as about Sarigama Pa. The emphasis here is for the student to stretch out his voice to produce different frequencies as well. A student-friendly scale like the Maya Malava Gaula, Melakarta 15, is chosen where the keys 1, 2, 5, 6, 8, 9, 12 are the Sarigama Padani. For example, Sa ri ga ma pa dha ni sa, sa ni dha pa ma ga ri sa. The upper sa is always added, thus we produce 8 notes when we sing. Even though the raga technically has only 7 notes, among other reasons, the 8-ness makes it easy to time the sequence in Adi Thalam, which has an 8-beat cycle. This particular ragam is chosen because the notes are spread out across the octave, and instead of subtly varying so that the beginning student can reproduce them easily. The notes are drilled into the student in a variety of excruciating exercises like sarali versa, jantra versa, etc., so that at the end of lessons, when asked, the student can utter a dha or a ri at the exact frequency, of course in a signature octave. Dha, ga, ni, ri. सा ध म प ग रे. Or if I ask a student to do a random set of phrases like ga ni dha, if you're a student of Carnatic music, you might want to try this. It's not as easy as it appears. Sa pa ri ri. See, ri ma ni ri ma ni ni dha ga. Okay, so these are all basically giving the students a capability to pick up out of pluck a note out of thin air given the background shruti. The initial lessons are purely on tone reproduction. Ragams and microtones come afterwards. Initially the student only learns the solfege notation, a bunch of sarigamas. He's not any taught any text or lyrics, sarigama, padanisa and so on. There will also be exercises on, in keeping thalam, for example 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4. That way you can keep the thalam in the third column. Now to tighten this, you can sort of put an offset at the end of the last 1 2 3 4. 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 5 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 one note at the end of the 1 2 3 4s, you'll come back to the main beat. And so this helps you hold on to the tempo of 1 2 3 4, even though the notes 1 2 3 4 are starting at different offsets. So these are very important exercises, often taught to mridangam students. Nowadays more vocal students are also picking it up, and I have such exercises available on my website. And then the students graduates into the simple songs called Geetams, the nursery rhymes of Carnatic music. And here is where we typically teach students the idea of Gamakam. These songs are set to mild ragams, and again the facets of the ragams are hardly emphasized at this point. The idea is to sing in tune following the teacher and sort of absorb the aesthetic slowly but surely, and get an idea of the Sahityam. Usually the Geetams are only a few songs and do not adhere to the Pallavi Anupallavi Charanam structure. The solfege notes are taught and sung first, and then the lyrics, called the Sahityams in Carnatic music, are sung out afterwards. So the teacher might first go, Ma Pada Sa Sari, and sing a line of text or Sahityam to fit it in. Shri Gananada. So this song, Lambodara Lakshmigraha, is available on my website if you want to look at it in more detail. Again, you can add Gamakam to this. Shri Gananada Dasa Sa Ri. That Sa Sa is actually a special type of Gamaka called Jantaswaram. Sari, 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 Sari. Shri Gananada Sindura Varna. Sindura Varna. It's a good idea to understand the meanings of the words and the integrity of the words, because the swaras might seem to go in a different direction as than the words themselves. So it's important to keep the integrity, or the words might be distorted to give some other meanings they don't intend to give. This can be fit into a third 3-beat cycle called Rupakam, since there are 6 notes. This is the first Geetam in the Ragam Malahari, a derivative of Maya Mala Gola. This is usually the very first Geetam anyone learns, and is available on my webpage. If you think about it, there are several ways to express or sing out a tune using the lyrics of a text, or humming out syllables like la 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 or a a a. You will find that this forms the basis of alapana or alapanai. Okay, so this is the akaram form. A a a you do alapane, which is an expansion of the ragam or raga swarupa. You can also decompose the tune into its corresponding notes and utter just the solfege notes. This is called the swara singing or swara jnanam, trying to understand what is the swara basis, swara and gamaka basis for the songs. This version of producing the tune is especially useful if you're trying to play an instrument where you don't care for the lyrics anyway. the intermediate student, once these basics like singing in tune, keeping thalam, etc. are mastered, the student is ready for more serious compositions. At this point, in addition to learning a particular song, the student is also trained to think in terms of ragams, etc. Even at this point, the improvisation is not introduced. Faithful following of the master is strongly emphasized so that the pre-existing songs are reproduced the way they were meant to be, tune, thalam and all. However tempting it may be and however nice it may actually sound, it's a big no-no for the intermediate student to blow his own stuff and distort the song. You cannot improve on perfection like a Beethoven symphony or a Thyagaraja composition. What is your reaction to this? The reality is somewhere in between, where unlike Beethoven symphony, which has slight different interpretation, the Thyagaraja compositions have different banis where they sing the same song with slightly different sangatis, and even within the same artist singing the same song multiple times, it might be slightly different because of the improvisations they just figure out at the spur of the moment. The student moves on to the next set of songs called varnams. A varnam actually stands for the word color. Is a song with a minimal amount of text, okay, but this text is stretched a lot so that people can, the students can actually learn the concept of gamakams and vocal acrobatics. So you stretch the syllables and twist them quite a bit, so a lot of vocal acrobatics can take place. For example, a simple word like swami, which means God, can be stretched to several beats in terms of time and might go in through several notes and might actually sound very interesting. Okay, so here I'm going to show you an example of such a song in a moment.
Stretch of the word Swami, but without losing the integrity of the word, and it also has a lot of gamakas. That's flat. Microtones which are given, and the sahitya is stretched.
So that was the word Swami, which is the beginning of a varnam in the ragam Shankarabharanam, Swami Ninne. Okay, so again, the varnam is the class for the varnam. Almost a 2-hour class is available online on my website on the varnams page. The idea here is to teach the student a little more about ragam structure, and you go deeper into the idea of gamakas, characteristic phrases, microtonal variations, but still it's highly structured, and also multiple talas and so on. Of course, the goal is to be able to train the vocal cords and produce such features of the ragam. It's also an exercise in maintaining the thalam and understanding the notion of sahitya. The varnam is also sung in concert in the beginning, usually as a well set piece which can basically provide a warm up for the musician. The varnam structure consists of a pallavi anupallavi charanam, somewhat similar, interspersed with it will be a lot of plain notes or swarams in the solfege syllables. So that is, there will be a lot of sarigamapa stuff sung along with the explicitly with the song. The structure of a varnam is approximately pallavi anupallavi. Initial swaram called Muktai swaram, back to Pallavi, and usually sung in multiple speeds. Pallavi, then you do the charanam, then you do swaram 1, charanam 1. These swarams are called chitta swarams, and swaram 2, charanam 1, swaram n, charanam 1, etc. So again, you can see the structure of varnams in my classes.
Neerajakshi neepai.
It's an example of a charanam.
Pama pagamari gasari ni sari gamani irajakshi neepai.
So this is an example of a swaram followed by charanam. in the Shankarabharanam Varnam. So there is only one stanza or charanam to speak. Even the stanza is usually only one line long. The basis of the introduction of swaram in these songs is to teach the students the main phrases of the ragam without obscuring the tune with lyrics. As the song progresses from swaram 1 to swaram n, the swarams get longer and more complicated. It takes longer for students to figure it out. To learn all the latter swarams, varnams are pre-composed, including the swarams. And there are lots of varnams to pick from. Usually there is a the common varnams are about 20 or 30, which are commonly used. Another interesting purpose of singing varnam is to practice it in the double basic, double speed, or even quadruple speeds. For example, we saw Swami. That's a slow speed. Swami ni ne ko ri. Swami ni ne ko ri swa. Another well-known varnam is the song Ninnu Kori. Ninnu Kori. So it comes. Ninnu Kori. Ninnu Kori. Unanura. Ninnu Kori. So these are the varieties of different speeds. Sometimes it's also strung in the Trishram Nadai, or three notes per beat. Remember, this was one of the varieties, Chatushram, Trishram, which represents the number of notes within a single beat itself, or tempos. The varnam is usually very bright and colorful. There's also slow-paced varnams called dance varnams, called padavarnams. Instead of being in just one ragam, some varnams are ragamalike, like a navragamalika varnam, which means it's a song which uses different ragams for various stanzas. The student moves on then from varnams to the mainstream Carnatic songs. These are known as kritis or kirtanais. There are subtle technical difficulties, differences between the two terms, but we are not going to quibble between these. The kritis are usually major pieces which follow the Pallavi Anupallavi charanam structure. Usually there will be just one charanam or one stanza rendered in the kriti. If Roop Tera Mastana were a Carnatic music kriti, you would only sing one stanza. Of course, there are exceptions. You see in these songs, there are in Roop Tera Mastana, you have some interludes followed by other sahitya, followed by again the Pallavi. So it also roughly follows the Pallavi Charanam, Pallavi Anupallavi Charanam format. Of course, there are exceptions. There are songs or kritis which do not adhere to the Pallavi Anupallavi Charanam format. Kritis are ornamental, and like music, movie songs, there are developments of themes. Okay, as we saw in Vatapi, there are the Vatapi Ganapatim Bhaje. It lays the basis, and then we have Vatapi Ganapatim Bhaje. These are all called sangatis. We'll look at more of sangatis pretty soon. Even though they are set to a ragam, their purpose is not to bring out every aspect of the ragam, but simply to produce a musical impact on the listener. So two kritis set to the same ragam might sound quite different. So for example, we saw Vatapi Ganapatim. So let me think of another song in this ragam.
Raghunayaka ni padamula, Raghunayaka ni padamula, Raghunayaka ni padamula, Rajiva mula ne vidajala, Raghunayaka ni padamula.
So this is an example of another song. Okay, sometimes a kriti, in fact, if you're not musically inclined, you will never notice that even two kritis are in the same ragam. but you know that you're getting into music if you're able to identify that two ragams are in the same, two kritis on the same ragam, even though you might not know what ragam it is. Sometimes in a kriti, the first lines might be varied systematically as a singer repeats it over and over. This even happens in some movie songs, that is, the Pallavi will be sung intentionally in different melodies as it gets repeated. The text of the line will be the same, but the music will be different. Such variations are called sangatis, and they are usually set up in a laddered format, going from the simple to the most complex. We saw that Vatapi Ganapatim Bhaje, and in the end we saw Vatapi Ganapatim Bhaje. These have much more of a flourish and also much faster, etc. Okay, so in between there are intermediate notes like Vatapi Ganapatim Bhaje or Vatapi Ganapatim Bhaje. Such variations called sangatis are intended by the original composer or cleverly introduced by other musicians somewhere in the line in the parts of the song. So as we saw the Kriti Vatapi Ganapatim, you'll notice that singer spends a long time mulling over the first line itself. If you paid close attention to the details, in fact it is varying the melody of that line over and over. In fact, the singer is producing various sangatis. Sometimes after all the variations are done, the final version of the Pallavi could sound totally different from what we started off with, as I just illustrated. In fact, usually the final version of the Pallavi is what the official version of the Pallavi from that point on, and this is the version that is sung after each stanza charanam subsequently. For example, karambuja pasha bija bhuram kalusha vidhuram budakaram haradi guru guhadoshida bimbam hamsadvani bhujita heram vada viganava timbhaje. So when you come back to Pallavi there, that is, we pick up the final flourishing finish, and that was the Anupallavi end, which we strung back along with the Pallavi. So even Anupallavi can have sangatis, etc. And big songs usually have lots of sangatis for both Anupallavi, Pallavi and Charanam, etc. By the time a student starts to learn a lot of kritis, he or she already has a reasonable level of expertise, and by this time the student knows how to decompose any musical phrase into its constituent swarams. They could easily tell you what notes make up Rupte Ramastana. At this point, the teacher no longer breaks down the lyrics into the constituent swarams, especially except when the musical phrases are very tricky. The teacher simply sings out the songs and the student tries to follow without making mistakes. It is no easy talk, given that there could be subtle variations from sangati to sangati. The musical phrases loaded with microtonal features are simply reproduced without trying too much analysis. But however, I am of the opinion that some analysis is useful, especially when you'd like to glean alapana insight from kritis. Vatapi tadarana tarina tarina. So these are all musical phrases or alapana that can be extracted from existing kritis. The advanced student, the creative juices flow. After several varnams and kritis are learned, it's time for the student to learn and improvise. Remember that the technical term for improvisation in Carnatic music is manodharma. Okay? Remember that the word dharma is actually a religious word. It actually means in Sanskrit that which binds or holds together. And manodharma, through the creation of the mind, it holds it together. That's what it means. At this point, it's apt to call the student a musician, or at least an amateur musician. In Carnatic music, improvisation is an add-on to pre-existing music, but however, it's quite common to see improvisation, and usually it's almost 50% or more of the concert. Especially in older concerts, it is much larger portion of the entire concert. In fact, they had much fewer songs and more improvisation. In other words, you cannot distort a song like Rupte Ramastana, but you can add to it. There are several ways to improvise. Let's examine some of them, such as Alapana, Nerival, and Kalpanaswaram or Swarakalpana. Alapana is essentially free format humming. The purpose of the Alapana is to bring out the total character of a ragam. Alapana is sometimes called ragam singing or raga alapane. It is unfortunate that we tend to use the word to mean different things in music. If someone says ragam, it could mean a scale of Shankarabharanam, or it could differ to the Alapanam. You have to know what the context is. So Alapana is really trying to bring out the form or swarupa of the raga beyond, over and beyond the basic arohana, arohana and the gamaka structure of the ragam. For example, if the musician is going to perform a song in the ragam Shankarabharanam, he or she would do an alapana just before this song. The musician would try to sing out as many characteristic phrases as possible to enunciate the features of Shankarabharanam. This is a place for him to show his creativity. He would use no texts or words. Instead, the Carnatic musicians use nonsense phrases like Thadarina and so forth to hum out his tune. Hindustani musicians use the simple A or Akaram. Alapana is not set to any Thalam either, but even though there are no constraints, it's a good idea to understand what kind of gait or tempo is being used so that you can use that to get newer and more interesting phrases. So there are no real constraints on how long the musical phrases are. Alapana can be micro mini, just lasting a couple of minutes, and equally well it can last for half an hour or more. In the olden days it was known that several musicians in ragam like Stodi, they could sing for several days together for the same ragam, looking at various aspects of the ragam. This is the ragam Todi. This is an example of how an alapana has begun. Ga pa ma ga ri ri sa. Usually there's a lot of poise which is involved in alapana, so that you lay the foundation and you can keep the listener's attention, you can communicate with the listener, including yourself. So, this is an example of alapana. Just how exactly does one go about doing the humming and bringing out the essentials of the ragam? There is no clear answer to this question. It's a practice. However, there's a method to this madness of alapana singing, even though there's no prescribed algorithm to perform it. The artist usually starts out in the lower part of the scale, like I did, constructing short melodies in that subset of the octave. Then as the alapana proceeds, he would meander into the higher notes, like I stopped at panchamam. This meandering is known as a sancharam or sangati. So as the alapana proceeds, we see we would meander into the higher reaches or tarasthai. Even here you just use the subset of the scale. So every sangati sits around in a zone, and eventually you reach the higher octave. Then you make up these tougher melodies, usually either the high speed ones or the ones with a lot of brigas, etc., depending upon the artists and their interests and their likings. Usually the goal is to bring out a mood of either pure joy or some sort of a more graver mood, etc., or anger, etc. Anyway, so there's a lot of leeway, and it's a form of an expression of emotion. Then you make all these tough melodies in the high end of the scale and then come down the scale slowly. So, but this need not be the case in every alapana, even though the olden technique was first to do a quick summary of the ragam, both in small, lower, higher reaches, and then start off in zone by zone, going into every region. So listen to an alapana and see if you can identify when the musician is making melodies in the lower part of the scale, when he moves to the higher notes, when he makes complex melodies, and when he asymptotically comes to a stop, and see what kind of impact it makes upon you. Music has to emote, that is, it has to communicate with your emotion. My view is that alapana should be sung before each song. It is also nice to elaborate the ragam being performed. Also, in a concert situation, alapana lets a musician transition from one song to the next song smoothly. Imagine an intense musician performing Shankarabharanam. He cannot abruptly move to the next song, perhaps Desh. Here, a little alapana and Desh could smooth him into the new ragam. By the way, the ragam I sang was called Thodi or Hanuman Thodi. It's a major ragam for alapana. Even though the alapana is an improvisation, very few musicians would walk into the stage call and start thinking about alapana. The odds are that they would have practiced at least some part of the alapana leisurely at home, or would have some brief sort of pegs in the alapana which they might want to try out, or some regions they might want to try out. In fact, if you followed a musician from concert to concert and he performed an alapana and Shankarabharanam in both concerts, you might see that he either actually repeats a lot of phrases, or he had mentally made up his mind to explore different regions in different concerts. A musician is not graded on how impromptu and extempore his rendition is, but more on how what beautiful melodic phases he comes up with in the Manodharma segment, and some of them are truly out of the world phrases. Nerival is a technical term given for improvisation variation of a improvised variation of a line in a song. Typically, any one song in a line of the song is chosen, and its melody is varied intentionally over and over. Remember, this is exactly the definition for the term Sangati, except that the Sangatis are parts of the Kalpita song, that is, original composition introduced by the composer, and they also tend to occur only in the first couple of lines of the song, namely Pallavi and Anupallavi. In Nerival, you typically choose a line from somewhere in the middle and park there. You can do a Nerival in your song group there, Amasthana, by choosing a line somewhere in between, such as Ankunsi Ake, and endlessly vary the melody, bringing out the features of the ragam. Remember that Nerivals, that since Nerivals are variation in lines of a song, one must strictly adhere to the thalam structure, and improvised melody should last the appropriate time intervals. Let me give you a small example, couple of examples of Nerival.
Nidurra Nirakarimchi.
This is the ragam Thodi, which we just sang. It's a charanam of a song called Kaddanu Variki.
Nidurra Nirakarimchi Mudugatam borabati nidura nirakaryuchi Mudugatam borabati nidura nirakaryuchi
Okay. So this is an example of an interval where we gave some improvisation. There are many, there's a lot of scope in this particular spot. Let me give you another spot from a ragam called Kiravani.
The
song has the meaning of these lines are Alai Magal, Kalai Magal, Pani, Keervani. The ragam name is also Keervani. Keervani also stands for the names of the goddess Parvati. Alai Magal is Lakshmi, Kalai Magal is Saraswati. Both of them are praying Pani to this goddess. That is the nice meaning of the song, meaning of this line, and then you can vary on this.
Alai Alai Magal, Kalai Magal, Pani Keervani. 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 Magal, Kalai Magal, Pani Keervani. Alai Magal, Kalai Magal.
Then we can do it at higher speed, etc., or in different reaches.
Alai Magal, Kalai Magal, Pani Keervani. Alai Magal, Kalai Magal, Pani Keervani. Alai Magal, Kalai Magal, Pani Keervani. Alai Magal, Kalai Magal.
Okay, after this we do the third avenue of the creativity, which is called Kalpana Swaram, or to create solfege note sequence formation extempore. Here the musician makes up swara sequences fitted to talam, of course, of the ragam. Sometimes the sequences can be mathematical and sometimes very interesting complex patterns. These swaram passages are made typically at the end of the kriti after the niraval is sung. Or sometimes you don't do a niraval, you just go into the swaram. This is called swaram singing from a particular point in the song and then comes to the phrase. At the end of the swaram passage, he would come back to the pallavi or whichever phrase he picked. The landing should be smooth back to the pallavi. So
gamapadani alai magal kalai magal sanidabamapadani alai magal kalai magal rikka sarigari sanit nidabadani alai magal kalai magal Rigamariga Sariga Sariga Karigani Alai Magal Kalai Mapadani Sadni Dava Magga Mapadani Alai Magal Kalai Magal.
So we saw that there is an interesting thing you can note here. The landing back to the Pallavi is smooth. That is, if the swara sequence ended in the note ni and the Pallavi started in ga, there is a perceptible discontinuity and such things are not allowed. So here alai started at sa, so we finished at gamapadani alai magal garisani risani da padani alai magal, things like that. So we ended at ni to finish at sa. The swara sequence would more appropriately end at a re for ga or ma for ga to be able to smooth into the gandharam. But there are very interesting phases where you can end at different notes and pick up anywhere.
Ka va va kanda va va enne sanida va ma ka va va gariga ma pa ka va va gariga ma pa da ka va va gariga ma pa da ni ka va va ga ma pa da ni sari gari rik ni da da ga ma pa da ni sa ka va va Nidari gari re ga ga ma ga ri sa ni sa ri 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 sa ni sa ri ni sa pa da ma pa ma da ni sa ri da da pa pa ga ma pa da ni sa ri gari re ga ri ga ma ma ga ri sa ni sa ri 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 sa ni sa ri ni sa pa da ma pa ma pa da ni sa ri ga ga ma ma.
So things like this have been done in concerts. So these are again aesthetically driven. Of course, it is not necessary to choose the Pallavi as the place to home in. There are other places in the middle of the stanza where the launching points for the Swarakalpana blitz can happen. Even though the Kalpana Swaram sounds very constraining in terms of sticking to the Thalam and finishing the Swaras sequence, several performers earn a name for themselves by building up incredibly creative sequences. There are enough freedoms, for example, Swaras can be single-spaced or double-spaced or higher, and adding an element of tempo building to the performance. Sometimes a musician might make up a structure for the Kalpana Swaram. He might start off with a long Swaram passage as he moves, progresses into the Kalpana Swaram. He might shorten his sequences to smaller and smaller phrases and might eventually end up in just single notes, at which point he would conclude his Swaram singing by launching into a final long climactic Swaram passage lasting several Thala cycles, somewhat like a cadence. Usually after this Kalpana Swara, the song is concluded. So to summarize, let's see the structure of a Carnatic song in light of Manodharma. Pallavi Sangati 1 to Sangati N, Pallavi final Sangati, Anupallavi followed by its Sangatis coming back to Pallavi, final Sangati, Charanam, and then you might pick up a Nerival at any one of these points, and then you might do a Kalpana Swaram. Another form of the Manodharma Sangeeta is called the Ragam Thanam Pallavi, where the Pallavi there is composed on the spot by famous musicians, or it's a well-known Pallavi which is just set to the Ragam. The Ragam is actually much more elaborate, and there are some differences in the way the Ragam is sung for Ragam Thanam Pallavi. Definitely much more elaborate. And the Thanam portion is one we have not looked at before. Pallavi is like pretty much like a Nerival, but it can happen in weird Thalams and weird Nadais and so on. It is usually an exposition of a pure creativity of the artist. Now, Thanam is something that came out of the Veena school, where you can actually incorporate some idea of Thalam into the Ragalapana, but without actually keeping strict Thalam. This is usually done very well in the Veena or Gotu Adhyam, and also nowadays in violin and other instruments, and also in vocalists do it. That is the end of the gentle intro, part 3.